So this is Jeanette Lavelli, and today is March the 22nd, 2024. We are at the Blue Lake Writers Conference, and we're talking about humor sells. And I have some lovely ladies in my class. I woke up one day and said, I want to write humor. When I sat down to the keyboard, the one-liners and witticisms flew from my fingers like lightning flashes. Now I make tons of money with my laugh-a-second writing. Everyone's laughing. And if you believe that, I have a timeshare I'd like to sell you. I started to say a boat, but everybody here loves boats. So I never planned to become a humor writer. The biweekly column I authored for our local newspaper began as an inspirational human interest feature, but I soon discovered that writing about the messes I got myself into endeared me to people. Although they may shake their heads and wonder how I manage some of my ditzy doings, it makes them feel better knowing they aren't alone. The exposure of my wackiness has become a public service of encouragement to my readers, which says, if God can rescue me from myself, there's hope for you. Okay, so, well, this is my story, is while packing to attend my first writer's conference, which was in 2008, I realized that I could only meet with one editor to begin with, at least, until everybody got a slot. And I had just thrown in a humor column that I wrote for the paper as a last-minute thing. I had my book proposal. I had everything ready to show an editor to pitch a book that I was writing. And this particular editor that I wanted to meet with stood up at the beginning to introduce himself. His name is James Watkins. And he said, I need humor columns. And so I thought, great, wonderful. I'll show him my humor column. And when I met with him, I showed it to him. It was 800 words long. And he said, can you cut this to 300 words? And being the yes person that I am, I said, oh, yes, of course I can. I know I can. Handouts are in the back. And so I ended up writing for him. I really prayed while I was cutting that down because, you know, that's my baby. I was just a new writer. And so it's hard for me to cut, but I did with the Lord's help. And I showed him my piece. I started selling humor articles to him for nearly 5 years for the magazine that he published, which is now out of print. Many of those articles are now chapters in my first two books, and one of them is The Heart of Humor. A lot of those are my humor columns that I sold to Jim in my early days. I write about anything from food that calls your name at night to what I've learned from my cats. Life is all about naps. I mostly tell on myself, but I get in an occasional story about my husband's 101 ways to annoy me, or a nameless relative who complicates the smallest task. Humor is everywhere, and everyone needs to laugh. So if you're willing to shine a light on your quirks and get silly over everyday issues, you can make money with humor writing. In between the cat naps, of course. Okay, here are some benefits of laughter. Now, I'm going to go through this pretty quickly because we've only got, 40 minutes. So you can look at the board if you miss some of the benefits of laughter. Laughter strengthens the immune system. It increases T cells. Those are the ones that hunt down cancer cells and viruses. It curbs food cravings. I really like, that's my favorite. It curbs food cravings. It increases our tolerance for and reduces pain. Handouts are in the back, on that back table. I have a friend who took a humor movie when she was in labor with her third child. I guess the first two were so painful that she thought, I'm going to try something different than Lamaze. And she took a funny movie and she said it got her through her worst hours of labor. Now, I don't recommend getting pregnant in order to try this, but it did increase her tolerance for pain, and it does for most people. Laughter decreases the levels of stress hormones. It lowers our blood pressure. Can you imagine? I love that. It reduces blood sugar levels. So if you're pre-diabetes or have diabetes, it helps. It improves your job performance. How many of you have jobs? You work outside your home. I do too. I've always been a part-time writer. Yes, it improves your job performance, especially if your work depends on creativity or solving complex problems. It's the glue of good marriages. Have you ever been mad at your spouse and all of a sudden you start laughing and realize how stupid you're fighting over spaghetti sauce, how thick or thin it should be, or something dumb like that? It synchronizes the speaker and the listener, and this is true in our case, the writer and the reader. So they're emotionally attuned. Now, this is what I've noticed in speaking. It opens my listener's heart to the truths of God's word. If I can help you laugh, it will relax you and you'll be more open to what I have to say about Jesus. Isn't that wonderful? It establishes a positive rapport and a positive emotional climate between people. Don't you like to hang out with people that are funny and that laugh a lot? It doubles the persuasiveness of a message. My word, what kind of messages do we have? Anybody here currently writing something? Okay, tell me the message in one sentence. Is it a novel?
No, picture book.
A children's picture book. Okay.
One sentence. This is so hard.
Okay.
I have to do it for all of them too.
Okay, we can get back to you.
Okay, good.
Yeah, we'll get back to you. Okay, anybody else on the top of your head or tip of your tongue know what message your current writing project is? Okay, we'll skip that. It doubles the persuasiveness. If you can add a little bit of humor in there, it will. Handouts are on the back, dear. Back table, if you'd like handouts. Yes, okay. It causes readers and listeners to lower their defenses, and it comforts and encourages our readers. That's probably one of my favorite ones. David Muir says, I believe that when I make someone laugh, I give them a gift. Because sometimes life can be hard and scary. And depressing. It's true nowadays more than ever. People really need to have laughter in their lives, and they especially need to laugh about the very things that can make us want to rip our hair out by the handfuls. Hands full or handfuls? Our kids? That thing our spouse does that bugs us? Our church family? Our job? Our limited station wagon? Well, nowadays they don't have station wagons, but SUV. Did you think of your message?
Be careful what you wish for.
Oh, be careful what you wish for. Ooh, that's a good one for children. And so if you can add a little humor in there, it's going to double the persuasiveness of that message. So we are convinced the benefits of laughter, of the benefits, pardon me. How can we incorporate it into our writing to make our writing more saleable? Here are some ways to add humor to your story or manuscript. Before we go on to that, and talking about saleable, the first book I ever wrote, Two Scoops of Grace with Chuckles on Top, has a chapter called, Can Preachers Have Sex on Sundays? Someone asked me that question. My husband is a preacher. And someone asked me one time. I know.
Depends how you use this. Is it work or pleasure?
I think. Never mind about the comment that someone made. I said to them, I think this person had had one too many drinks when they asked me that. And I said to them, of course, if it's with their spouse. But anyway, it's just a chapter about that particular story. And the editor that I pitched the book to, now, ladies, I'm pitching this whole book to him. It's a book of humorous devotionals, Two Scoops of Grace with Chuckles on Top. And he said, you need to title your book, Oh, Can Preachers Have Sex on Sundays? And I said, I do not. Because guess what people would think that book was about? Yeah, so it'll add saleability to your message, but just be careful, I'd say. That's just a little aside. Okay, so we're convinced. Ways to add humor to your writing. Now we're going to get to nuts and bolts. Make fun of yourself. We talked about that earlier. Tell stories about yourself. Your spouse, your Uncle Fred, your child, or your pet. If it's a nonfiction piece, or a character if it's fiction. I wrote a piece. In fact, the piece that I sold to Jim Watkins was called The Brouhaha Twins, about how my husband and I were always getting into fights about stupid, idiotic things. You know, whether this was a pine tree or a spruce tree, it doesn't really matter. And, you know, spaghetti sauce and things like that. Really dumb things. Not money, not how to raise our kids. Just idiotic things. And so I told on myself. It endears you to readers. Show, don't tell. How many times have you heard show, don't tell? Okay, 10. Oh, okay, we're back here counting by tens. Hundreds of times. And why do editors tell us that? Because I can say, I went to the beach. Or I can say, the smell of salt water filled my senses with joy. And the feel of sand between my toes made me want to melt. Okay, so I'm showing them. I'm not saying I went to the beach. I'm showing them by sensory detail that where I was at. And so the reader gets a picture in their mind. And you can do that with humor, too. I can write an article about food that talks to you, and I did, but it's much funnier if I accuse barbecue chips and chocolate chip cookies by name and how they call to me at night when the kids are in bed and there's no light coming from under their door and I sneak down or I open my husband's underwear drawer to get out the chocolate chip cookies so the kids don't hear me. Or you can put a character in your book or your story that attracts, I said bad luck, I don't believe in luck, but attracts misfortune by showing us the kinds of over-the-top situations she gets into. Who's really good at this? Jen Tureno. Has anybody ever read her novels? She's an excellent, she's a well-sold author who writes historical fiction in a humorous style. Cami Tang is another one who writes fiction and adds a lot of humor to it.
How do you spell their last name?
Okay, Tureno, T-U-R-A-N-O. And her first name is Jen, like short for Jennifer. Jen Tureno and Cami, C-A-M-Y, Tang, T-A-N-G, just like that orange drink. Yeah. Does anyone have an example of an over-the-top situation that they may have read about? Or that they can think of something that maybe happened to their lives? Okay. This is one that I wrote. Called I Love My Hips. For the first time in decades, I'm not worried about my hips getting larger as the holidays approach. I wrote this in October or something. I love my hips. I think that's the first chapter in that book that you have right there, the Humor Helps book. I feel sorry for all those skinny as a preacher's wallet supermodels slinking down the runway in their pencil skirts. They've never discovered the splendid uses of hips. In my hipless days, if I wanted to tote a box of Christmas decorations from the backyard shed to the house, I had to carry it in both arms like a hug. Made navigating across the yard a bit rough since I couldn't see what I was stepping in. Now I simply perch the box on one hip, breeze across the yard, open the door with my free hand, and collapse into the room. Hips are also useful for bouncing hungry or colicky babies while stirring macaroni on the stove. Without hips, you'd have to plunk Junior or Princess in their high chair and listen to them wail while you tried to fix supper. A ton of macaroni has been rescued from burning by the marvelous invention of hips. There are handouts on the back table. I discovered my favorite use for hips on a recent visit to see my grandchildren. I sat down on a playground swing and realized there was no danger of me falling out, no matter how high I flew. My handy hips had wedged me in tighter than a sailor on shore leave. But I knew I'd never revert to being hipless again when my 6-year-old grandson stepped behind me to push. In his innocent voice, he said, "Grandma, you're so easy to push because your bum is so big." That's why you won't find me refusing mashed potatoes or eggnog this holiday season. How can I let my little guy down? I do wish they'd find a way to get me out of this swing, though. Okay, another technique is to use timing to your advantage. Put a funny word at the end of a sentence. I can write, "Ah, the joys of unasked for advice." I love it when people tell me things I don't want to know for my own good. In one recent case, for some ducks' good. Or I can write, "For the good of some ducks." Now, to end that sentence with the word ducks, why is the word ducks funnier than the word good? Because it has a K in it. Believe it or not, it's a true statement that words with K in them are funny. I don't know why. It's just true. You can say confused. Well, confused and discombobulated both have the same. They both have a K sound, so that's not a good example. Okay, another technique in using timing to your advantage is you can force the reader to pause before the punchline by starting a new paragraph. And I just read, "I love my hips." And before I read that last paragraph, but I do wish they'd get me out of the swing. Yep. I paused. You can force the reader to do that by doing a new paragraph. And you can do, all of you should or not should, but you probably already know this, you bring emphasis to a thought when you just use one sentence as a paragraph. You don't want to do that real often, but every now and then it is very effective because it draws attention to that paragraph that's only one sentence long. Study words and find the fun ones. Use a thesaurus, Roget's synonym finder, which I highly recommend even more than a thesaurus because it's fatter, it has a lot more words in it. Even ask other writers' opinions for their favorite fun words. For instance, laugh is fine, but chuckle is more fun. Now, there again, chuckle has a K in it. It paints a picture in your mind. Now, I read a novel recently where the author loved the word chuckle. Oh, no, it wasn't chuckle either. It was giggle. And I tend to whine to my husband when I find things that I don't like in other people's writing. I know it's prideful. Lord, forgive me. It's pride. But I'll just be like, oh, this person loves alliterations. I'm so tired of Lazy Lucy and, you know, Chipper Charlie. But this particular author loved to have her characters giggle. And everyone was always giggling. And I just wanted to slap them. Okay, so that shows my impatience. Okay, where was I? Study words and find the fun ones. Confused will work, but discombobulated sings, doesn't it? You get a picture in your mind. Confused, you see that person kind of wandering around looking for their lost keys or their lost phone. But if they're discombobulated, you really have a very clear picture of what we're talking about here.
There's a book that was recently put out by a children's book author called Absurd Words.
Absurd Words is a book that one of our students is talking about right now. She said it's a children's author. She thinks it's Tammy Lazar, but she's going to look it up. Absurd Words. Okay, we're going to go on. And while she's looking up this author of Absurd Words. Okay, another example. Think does the job. But cogitate is witty. Can you see someone cogitating? That's maybe an old fish. She's over here. Okay. It's probably an older word. I need to scratch that one from my notes. Okay, let's go back to the Absurd Words author. And her name is?
Tara Lazar, L-A-Z-A-R.
Tara Lazar, L-A-Z-A-R. Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to look that up. Absurd Words. Excellent. Okay, keep a file of stories, jokes, and phrases that make you laugh. Read them for inspiration. We pray for inspiration. We ask the Lord to help us, but you can also read. I love Irma Bombach. Even though she's in heaven now, I love her style. I love her poignancy. It's just, and she's over the top, but I love her writing. Another one is Dave Barry. Now, he can get nasty at times. I don't like that at all, but I like his style of humor. Anybody else have humor writers that they like? Or even comedians? Tim Hawkins.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Oh, my goodness. We're going to see Tim Hawkins next month, and I ask each of my family members, do you want to go see Tim Hawkins? I'll buy you a ticket. Yes. Do you want to see Tim Hawkins? Each of my family members, even the kids, even the teenage kids in the family was like, absolutely. Everyone in our family, and we go from 72 down to 16, wanted to see Tim Hawkins.
Jeannie Robertson.
Oh, Jeannie Robertson. Oh, yes, yes, yes. She's excellent. Okay, let's move on. Use surprise to catch readers. Finish a list with an item that doesn't fit. Now, this is an older book written in the 70s by a stewardess called Coffee, Tea, or Me. It's not the cleanest book on earth. It's a little bit sexy, but it was written in the 70s, so it's not horribly sexy. It is a secular book. I started to say it's a sexy book. It's not. It's a secular book, but it's cute stories. So surprise the reader at the end if you're doing a list of something. Make it not fit. I can't think of any examples other than that one off the top of my head. But I'm sure you can. I'm sure the Lord will show you some ways to do that. Have a character do something out of character if you write fiction. Have you ever read a book where they do that? Here's a cowboy who's rough and tough, and all he'll ever wear is boots. And he wears his leather jacket and his cowboy hat, and he rides a black horse. because he's a man's man. But when he meets the girl he loves and he finds out her story and how abused she's been, you know, he cries like a baby. That's not funny. I'm sorry. I just contradicted myself. Okay. So if you write fiction, and I don't, but have a character do something out of character, and it can be a surprise. End a paragraph, line, or story with something unexpected. To me, this is the best kind of humor. It's surprise humor. Let me see if I can find a speed bump in the night. I don't think I have that one here. Okay, we're going to move along. Okay, edit until it makes your cranky next door neighbor or your spouse who doesn't even like your sense of humor smile, or at least roll their eyes. If it makes them chuckle, send it to your editor. Okay, here's one that has kind of a surprise ending. It's called Hotel Room Follies. When we checked into our favorite hotel, and this also uses hyperbole, which is, who knows what hyperbole means? I'll let you answer.
That's what I was going to say.
Alice, exaggeration, right. It's kind of, you're telling the story, but you add to it to embellish it and make it funnier. When we checked into our favorite hotel, the owner said, calm as a tortoise, would you like to rent some towels, Mr. and Mrs. Labelli? Although I won the Talkathon USA contest 10 years in a row, and my husband is a preacher, we were both speechless. What do you mean, rent towels? We've stayed here for the last 5 years whenever we visit our daughter and her family. You've never charged for towels before. He smiled, feigning patience. It's our new system. Vandalism was so high that our general manager required us to charge for towels. But if you'd rather not do that, you can use the body size blow dryer we've installed in all the bathrooms. Many of our guests prefer it. My face turned 4 shades of crimson as I imagined myself standing in front of a huge blow dryer, body fat jiggling at 75 miles per hour. No, thank you, I said. We'll borrow some Dora the Explorer and Bob the Builder towels from our daughter. Any other changes we should know about? Oh, yes, he grinned. We've replaced the mini steam irons with full-size irons. Great, said my husband. Last time it took Jeanette 40 minutes to iron my shirt with that little Barbie-sized iron and ironing board you gave us. The owner looked sympathetic. Well, I think you'll find this iron much faster, but be careful when you use it. The chain is only 3 feet long. Chain, I howled. Oh, yes, we can't have them stolen like the towels. We chain them to the ironing boards. I sighed as I picked up our room key and turned to my husband. At least we have a bed to sleep in, honey. Oh, you want a bed? Said the owner. Eyebrows rising. That will be an extra $40, please. All right. Let's go on. Types of humor writing. Disasters that resolve themselves. Embarrassing situations. I will just tell the story rather than reading it. But the first garden I ever had, it was about 2 miles from our home. We lived in L.A., so there wasn't a lot of garden space. If you've ever been to L.A. or seen pictures of it, it's houses and buildings everywhere. And you just don't have a vacant lot anywhere. But a company near our home, 2 miles from our home, rented garden space to people who wanted fresh vegetables. And so I thought, oh, this will be a good learning experience for my children. We were homeschoolers at the time. And, of course, I ended up doing all the work. But I went to Kmart and bought my onion sets, and I couldn't figure out why they sold onion sets in 100 sets of 100. But anyway, about 100 onion sets, and I was in a hurry that day. So I read the directions, plant 10 inches deep, 2 inches apart. So I thought, how am I going to get those little baby onions 10 inches down into the soil? So I got my pencil out of the car, because remember, I was 2 miles from home, and I dug 100 holes in the soil 2 inches apart. And I was so sweaty by the time I got home. And we had church that night, so I had to read to take a shower and the whole nine yards. And so on the way home, though, I had this funny feeling. Did you ever get that funny feeling like, uh-oh, what if I didn't read the instructions correctly? And so at a stoplight, I read and it said 10 inches apart, 2 inches deep. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? So I called my neighbor who's from Kentucky, and she was a world-class gardener. And she said, my land's child, you're going to have to plant them onions all over again. They probably won't come up either. Well, guess what? I had 2 sets of onions. They did come up. And I had the first set, and we ate those, and then I had the second set. And the green part was this. No, the white part was 10 inches long. I was so excited. And I put those 10-inch long green, quote, onions on the table to serve my family for dinner one night. And I was so excited. I was a gardener. And my son Ron said, Mom, did you forget that you're the only one in the family that likes onions? And then the laugh was on me. So that was an embarrassing situation. I have tons of them. Outcomes only the reader can anticipate. So circumstances where the writer goes into it not knowing the outcome, but the reader can anticipate a disaster. Putting dish liquid in a dishwasher. This is a sitcom thing that they use way too often. Do you remember, did any of you ever watch I Love Lucy or reruns where the conveyor belt is going too fast and they're stuffing their mouths with chocolates? That's the cutest one. Putting a red sweater in the washer with white underwear. You know, if it's a teenager, the first time they're washing, or a husband that doesn't know how to separate, and they put something red in there. An English professor buying a New England bed and breakfast and attempting to run it himself. That was the basis of a sitcom at one time. So circumstances where the reader can anticipate what's going to happen and it's not good. We talked about hyperbole. If you're writing for kids, especially middle graders, they love gross things. They love bugs and spiders and worms and farts and things like that, especially boys. Love, it's what my husband calls junior high humor. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's hurry along. Innocent children's doings are fun. Things little kids say that they're innocent. My son said one time when I had warm water running to brush my teeth, and I said, he was waiting to brush his, it was nighttime, and I said, I'll turn this hot water off soon, honey, so you can brush your teeth with cold. And he said, that's okay, Mommy, I don't mind burning my teeth. And he had said that innocently, and I think I put it in a devotional or something. Sarcasm, use it sparingly. Don't be cruel, but use it to make fun of yourself. Or, you know, like I talked about getting stuck in the swing because my hips were so big. I really didn't enjoy getting stuck in the swing. It really was hard for me to get out of that swing. That really happened. Dumb things others do. Now, be careful with this. Get their permission. If you're going to use Uncle Fred's you know, failed to make a cake or whatever he did that was dumb. You know, he bought a dog that he thought wasn't going to shed. And now every time someone sits on the couch, they get, you know, dog hairs on their bum, something like that. Get his permission if you're going to do that. Otherwise, change their name, make them unrecognizable. You know, my Aunt Millie, and maybe you don't have any aunts, or you have an uncle that did something dumb, and you change it to a cousin. What if I'm not funny? Well, you can learn to be funny. The first thing that I recommend is hanging around funny people. Hopefully you know someone who's funny. Hopefully you have a friend who laughs a lot and who makes others laugh. That is the best way to learn how to be funny. See what they do. Kind of observe them. See what words they use even. Some words are funnier than others. And read writers that are funny. Read, like I said, funny people, even novelists. Frequent humor websites, and I have some at the end of your notes, I hope. Some of the handouts. I have some websites. You can sign up to get a joke a day, a clean joke a day into your inbox. Do I have this on your notes? Okay, good. Okay, humor websites and emails. Okay, good. And you can learn to surprise readers. Okay, there's one final caveat. Don't slam readers with one funny after another. Give them a chance to catch their breath. Give them a chance to recover, then slip in something comical when they least expect it. Okay, I think we have a few minutes for questions.
Can you just play the last slide?
Sure. This one final caveat. Yes. I love the baby that's saying, say what? Okay. Oh, you're welcome. Any questions or any authors you would like to share that you enjoy reading that are humorous? Okay. If you think of any, talk to me later and I'll add them to my resources here. I'll add them to my notes. Thank you for coming. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you.